Well, first this morning, some insights into how the gambling, alcohol and tobacco industries go about their political influencing. Here's a quote from a politician. If someone donates $1,000, they support you. If they donate $100,000, they've bought you. That was told to researchers in a study of political donations and lobbying. Their report, published in the Drug and Alcohol Review, found that donations to the governing party increased during policy debates relevant to those industries, and that donations to both major parties increased ahead of elections. As well, some intriguing behind-the-scenes activity emerged, and all, of course, against the backdrop of that Commonwealth Integrity Commission being announced this week, amidst all the then further debates as to whether it was adequate. The lead author of this report is Professor Kypros Kipri. He's the Senior Braun Research Fellow in the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Newcastle, and with us also to talk about how lobbying and donations could be better regulated, if not banned, is Michael Thorne, Chief Executive of the Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Kipri, you had anonymous interviewees, both lobbyists and political players and staffers, talking to you. What did you learn from them? Dare I ask you, what surprised you?
Look, I think the quote that you read out, I think, is probably not terribly surprising. I think, unfortunately, you know, when I'm talking about this work to people, to, you know, fellow citizens, they're not terribly surprised. And so, you know, having confirmation of some of that and in such kind of bald terms was useful. I think what surprised me was this phenomenon of small money lobbying, and that it's not just about the large donations that are made to, you know, really get the attention of government and to influence specific policy debates, but also the long-term planning and the strategy to develop relationships and mutual obligation with, you know, for example, early career politicians who are chosen as, you know, worthy of patronage and relatively small amounts of money and regular contact, you know, over a long period of time, like water dripping on stone is sometimes the sort of metaphor.
It's often put as just an ongoing conversation, isn't it? People bumping into each other at corporate functions and so on.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of that sort of incidental opportunity set up in where I think sometimes the people being influenced are perhaps a little caught off guard, but it becomes the norm for them to be hearing what they hear from, you know, particular groups with vested interests. And so perhaps they lose sight of the bigger picture through this constant pressure that's sort of built up around them. And it's done very strategically from the point of view of the vested interest.
And supporting of new and emerging MPs with small donations and sticking with them so that by the time the politician is in a position of influence, you have their loyalty. Now, this is really quite diabolical in its own way, isn't it? Diabolical strategy.
Yes, it is. I mean, and it makes it much more difficult to regulate. I mean, one of the things when we talk about the larger donations, the obvious approach to that is to restrict the donations to improve transparency and, you know, it's possible to make that more difficult. The long-term relationship building is more subtle, but there are methods that can be used to do that, to regulate that more effectively. And transparency is one of those. So making sure that the lobbyist registers are kept properly, and we've done previous research showing that they're not. Every jurisdiction, the Commonwealth and each state has a lobbyist register, and you would expect that would help they're designed to help improve transparency so that other political actors and members of the public can scrutinise who key decision makers are meeting with. Mm. So that's a means of, it's not going to eliminate it, but presumably reduce the freedom with which some of these contacts are made.
And there was just that piece on page 5 about how James Packer was, his advice was sought at crucial moments.
Yes. So, I mean, I think that's particularly worrying, that this is in the context of the proposed gambling reforms, and they were fairly modest reforms supported by evidence to restrict the maximum bets that could be made in any single button press on poker machines to $1, and also mandatory pre-commitment, and that meant that people could had to set limits for the amount that they planned to bet in a particular, you know, episode of betting, which is an important strategy for people who are addicted and one that many of them call for. They also call for being properly restricted from premises when they've been, run into serious problems. So this was something the Gillard government tried to introduce with the support, well, it was promoted by Andrew Wilkie, and this was meant to be, you know, a sort of a deal breaker for that agreement between those parties. And it ended up not going through despite very strong public support. And the quote that we have here is that essentially James Packer had to be consulted, and his answer was no way.
Hmm. And of course, the club's industry response at the time was all sorts of ads about the nanny state, as I recall.
Yes, yeah, a very big, powerful campaign that any government would have to take notice of. So the political power of some of these corporations is immense, or these sort of entities. In that case, it's a sort of trade association, and so. To be able to stare that down requires, you know, real political courage. I mean, during the same period, mind you, we saw some success in relation to the Alcopops tax. It doesn't always result in political failure.
Yeah, and at the time, you know, you had people like Andrew Wilkie, who's, I think, seems to me to position himself quite well, and people like Nick Xenophon, who was, of course, a very good positioner. So, you know, it becomes a real, it's a full-on debate, which we're not really aware of, are we?
Well, you know, what's interesting is
that, aware of.
Yes, we're only getting what's on the surface. The political dynamics underpinning it are mainly, you know, obscured. And I think we want to bring as much of that out in the open as possible and know where the interests are. Now, if it's a question of government deciding that they want the support from that vested interest, they want the donations, let them be transparent about that, right? And suffer the electoral consequences. And we need to be able to see in. And that's, you know, some of the strategies we're talking about are, you know, to remedy or to reduce this problem.
To have the community with a seat at the table, in a sense.
Exactly. Yeah. We want our political representatives to be representing us, not corporate powers.
Now, I might add, we did invite Clubs Australia, the Australian Hotels Association, and former Labor politician Steve Conroy, who heads up Responsible Wagering Australia, to be in this discussion, but none were available. And I'd like to draw in Michael Thorne here. I'm guessing none of Kip and colleagues' research comes as particular surprise to you, Michael, in your work at the Alcohol Research and Education Foundation?
Certainly not. It's what we have to deal with on a daily basis in trying to represent the public interest in things like alcohol control and the other public health organisations who are trying to deal with Australia's growing obesity problem, the gambling issues. And we're still, of course, having to combat the problems associated with smoking.
Yes. Now, why, like the numbers of lobbyists that public health, this is, I know, one of your particular pieces, that the number of lobbyists that public health is up against is enormous, like alcohol, as you say, and have much more than other industries. Are we seeing, is there a sort of a real growth in this industry, if I can put it like that?
Well, I don't know about a growth. I think it's been there all the time. I think that what's at the heart of this is really the kind of core of our political system, our democratic system, our system of our parliamentary democracy, and some work that the Grattan Institute undertook and published very recently showed that there's this kind of direct relationship between the number of lobbyists and the degree of regulation applied to particular industries, such as the alcohol industry. And Professor Mike Daube from Curtin University kind of did the numbers recently and spoke about them at a conference in Sydney earlier this year. He showed that in the tobacco industry's case, there were 34 direct and indirect lobbyists registered working for that industry. In the case of junk food, there were 46 direct and indirect. In the gambling industry, there were 47. And in the case of the alcohol industry, there were 66 lobbying firms been registered, working for the industry and their interests.
They are incredible figures, aren't they? Now, you've been a bureaucrat both in WA and Canberra. Have you observed the other side of this, Michael?
I certainly have. Let's say in the first instance, in my current role, much of what I do is lobbying and advocacy on behalf of public health. But those numbers, I think, demonstrate how it's weighted against us. And I would suggest, you know, most of our public health people are there for the public interest, not for their own self-interest. And I certainly, in my days working for the Gallup government, Jeff Gallup's government was elected in 2001. There had been significant donations from gambling industry interests to see pokies introduced into Western Australia. And you would know, Geraldine, that WA is the only place in this country that doesn't have poker machines other than at its one casino. And Aristocrat and the various other poker machine industry, both on the kind of club side, so the local clubs in WA, were all keen to see pokies introduced into WA. And they were being squired around by Labor Party interests, who obviously the donations had gone to. Fortunately, Cabinet and Gallup in particular was totally opposed to that idea. And I do recall him speaking to a Council of Social Services conference, and there was an eruption of applause when he said that he was not going to allow poker machines into WA.
And I presume some of this would be just tickets to things. I mean, it's not all overt, is it? It's subtle, I take it.
It's more than subtle. It's, as Kip said, it's this relationship building over a long period of time. And I think in the case of the alcohol industry, particularly the wine industry, it's not big donations, because we do have laws, political disclosure laws, that make those big donations public eventually. That whole system could be improved a lot, but they do eventually come out. Mm. It's the bottles of wine, the cases of wine, the kegs of beer, that sort of thing that flow. And the invitations to the annual Winemakers Federation of Australia event, for instance, and I've said this before, we're lucky if we hold an event at Parliament House to get three or four politicians to turn up. But if the Winemakers Federation holds one and rents the Portrait Gallery, for instance, for the evening, there'll be more than half the Parliament turning up to those events. It's a sort of imbalance in the execution of power.
Yeah, look, I'm just aware of the time. I know that the recent Grattan Institute report that came out in September looked at the extensive influence donors and lobbyists have, and those numbers are still astonishing me, Michael, across a range of industries. And they found that gambling and property development industries were hugely overrepresented compared to their contribution to the community. And I'm really wondering, Kip, given that we're trying to be constructive today and not just list all the ghastliness, where to from here? Like, can you see some changes possibly coming, like publishing diaries and the lists of lobbyists and so on?
Well, all of those things are steps in the right direction. I think the more fundamental question is you know, the whole donation system needs to be reformed. And in fact, many of our informants are current or ex-politicians. One ex-politician just said on balance, he'd prefer to see no industry funding of any kind of election campaigns, because it has the potential to distort. And it's possible to do that, to take into public hands the responsibility for funding the campaigns, which will be cheaper for us in the long run than having corporate influence produce really poor policy. Mm. And you know, I think it's certainly possible to implement. Other countries have got examples of doing that.
And very quick last recommendation from you, Michael.
Well, I think my favourite at the moment is to link the lobbyist register to the orange passes that all us public advocates have at the Parliament here in Canberra. That's an extensive list and gives people terrific access to politicians. If there was a public record of who the holders of those orange passes were, we'd get a better insight into who are these influencers and what they're up to.
Very interesting. Look, thank you both, Professor Kypros Kypri and Michael Thorne from the Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Thank you very much.